Hello, I'm Andrea Tabchar, a college public relations professor based in Toronto. My goal for my podcast is to interview PR practitioners with interesting stories to tell, and I wanted to share those with my students. I've decided to call it PR Delivered.
I would say I was just like any other first year student where you think that you know a lot, and you probably do, but not in the way that you think you do. I knew influencers and the way they work, how they, you know, partner with brands and do sponsored content and make money that way. And I also knew generally how to use it in my personal life to share videos, photos, whatever, with my friends and family, but I didn't really know how to build a following.
The first assignment my students complete in my social media course asks them to talk about the platforms they currently use and how they might continue to use them in the future to build their online network. Some will follow popular journalists and PR practitioners, while others choose celebrities, and one even named a gorilla from a zoo. While students know how to use the platforms for fun, they don't all recognize the very real power of social networking. The challenge is in the transition from personal to professional social media use, and that's where the reticence begins. The idea of engaging on a social media platform with their own content or reaching out to a prospective contact intimidates many. My PhD work focused on the social media lurker, who I prefer to describe as a peripheral participant. One finding that spurred this podcast was that many young people choose not to post on social media because they feel they have nothing to say. As an educator, I hear this from my students again and again. So I turned to one of my current students for her insights in the hope that she could inspire her colleagues, given that she's managed to not only figure out how to engage on social media, but to thrive there. Michelle Nguyen entered the Bachelor of PR program 4 years ago, knowing just a little about social media. After trial and error, perseverance, and a little courage, she co-founded SuperDuper, a creative studio with clients like TIFF, Nespresso, Canada Media Fund, and Muskoka Brewery, building social media strategies to stand out in the digital world. Michelle has agreed to share her thoughts on how to build a strong social media presence to help get you ready for the workplace. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Andrea. How's it going?
It's good. I'm so happy that you are able to share your thoughts with us. I know how busy you are, and I really appreciate it. So let's get going. My first question is, where were you in terms of your social media presence back in first year?
I would say I was just like any other first year student where you think that you know a lot. And you probably do, but not in the way that you think you do. I knew influencers and the way they work, how they, you know, partner with brands and do sponsored content and make money that way. And I also knew generally how to use it in my personal life to share videos, photos, whatever, with my friends and family. But I didn't really know how to build a following. It was very, you know, once you start going out in the real world and you make real friends in real life, and then hopefully they follow you on social media. And that's just kind of how I thought that social would go in terms of building followings. It was also, in general, a place of distraction, and it still is today. It would be a lie to say that it isn't, to look at memes, look at pretty pictures, talk to my friends, stay connected to everybody that I know. And it wasn't really until I started using it for work that I realized how useful it could be to not only get your name out there, but also to feel empowered by the communities that you create, the types of stuff that you post, and sort of the meaning that you put behind the stuff that you share. A lot of things, like you said before, about wanting to post but not really feeling like you have anything to say. That happens across the board with everyone, I think. And it's interesting to hear it because it seems so strange to me to think that, you know, everybody lives their unique lives, everybody has their own experiences, and yet a lot of people don't think that it's worth sharing. So it's I'm really excited to talk about social media because it is also my livelihood, but also because I think that people really need to start to figure out the type of power that it has and what can be done with it.
That's great. Thank you. And I agree. Everybody has something to say. And as an educator, I have classrooms full of bright and engaged students like yourself. And I know you've got lots to say. So how to leverage that makes a lot of sense. So how important is it that young people have a social media presence?
Extremely important. It's this like all around equalizer for everyone, because everybody starts out at zero followers and it's up to you whether or not you gain more, you lose them or whatever. As students, there's this cycle of needing experience to get experience in the workplace. And it's cyclical, it's painful. And instead of doing something about it, instead of trying to figure out, you know, how can I get this employer to believe that I can do the job, even if I very well know that I can, we don't realize that we can just create the experience ourselves, as opposed to waiting for somebody to hire us. And social media does that. You are the project manager, the designer, the copywriter, strategist, creator, everything. And it really shows, you know, can you build something from nothing? Do you know how to speak to an audience? Can you learn from what works and what doesn't? Especially when you're seeking jobs and trying to find something that fits not only for what you want to do in the future, but also whether or not it's actually interesting to you. Social media is proof that employers are looking for of whether you can pick the right images, use the right filters, the hashtags, what you write in the caption. It's every level of content creation to prove that you can do a job and not just say that you can.
I think that's an excellent point. And as much as schoolwork can be part of portfolio building, what you share on social is your own initiative and your own preferences. And there's that stamp of really your interest that really could highlight that skill set better than just a school assignment. So people should take more advantage of it. I agree with you. How can you leverage your personal social media platforms? You've addressed some of that, but let's go a little deeper.
Yeah, so I think at the very basics of it, because everybody has unique lives and experiences and whatever, it really has to come from a place of actually enjoying whatever it is you're about to do. If you don't enjoy it, you're going to hate it 100% of the time, and you're probably going to give up pretty quickly. So if you are somebody who likes to cook, you could start an Instagram feed full of pictures of your favorite meals. You could make cool Instagram reels for like behind the scenes prep, baking, that kind of thing. And then you could film full IGTVs and share recipes that you love, that like your mom gave you, ones that you've made yourself that you also really enjoy making and you want to share with people. You can also start a blog, which is also free. So if you enjoy things like fitness, you could build workout plans for other people and share them step by step in blog posts, or you could do YouTube instructional videos about, you know, relaxing and stretching and being mobile. It's a really great way to gain exposure about things you enjoy while also earning experience and proving it to people that you know what you're talking about. It's the importance of being seen as a thought leader and knowing that the things that you do and the things that you love also can give you something in return professionally of earning experience and feeling more, you know, put together, feeling like you can prove it to other people. You could also create a net new account. So something that isn't 100% of your work. So if you're not a particularly creative person, if you're not a particular person, you know, geared towards fitness, just like a genre account. So if you love interior design, you could curate a feed that is full of the best living rooms, images of the best plants, and then credit the creators that way. So you could find them on Pinterest, you could find them on Instagram, whatever, and then just make sure that you are tagging the handle after the fact. And then that can show you a really easy way to create your own feed that you actually really enjoy, but you don't have to put too much into content creation. It's more like content curation. So another thing that you can think about too, if this is something that you're interested in, is whether or not you create a fresh new Instagram or you combine it with your personal. This is really specific to Instagram, but it actually kind of depends on the content versus the audience that you're talking to, because you might alienate the people who already follow you. So in my case, I was a creative writer. I love poetry, I love writing, prose, all that kind of stuff. Everything under the sun I love to write about. So in my case, there was no alienation between Michelle, the friend that I follow on Instagram, and Michelle, the writer who posts things on Instagram. So there was no reason to make a new account in my scenario. But if you were somebody who, you know, you, the person, but also you're also really into like construction and interior design and infrastructure and things like that, if you posted something like that, the people that already follow you as the person might feel alienated and think like, huh, weird, what are they posting that about? And then you would start to lose followers, people would start to lose interest. So it really depends on the type of stuff that you are looking to post about, whether or not that you decide to create a whole new account or combine it with you as a personal account.
That's really good advice. And I love that idea of, you know, content curation. I follow somebody who has their own interior design business. And, you know, I'd say 80% of her posts are curated from other designers just to help show her style, because she's starting out. Like, she doesn't have enough of a gallery of her own stuff to showcase 100% of the time. But it's a really good way to keep her feed consistent and regular. So that's really good advice. What do you have to say? What do you think about building a digital portfolio? Like, talk about a couple of platforms that you recommend for that.
Yeah. So at the very basics of it, I think that everybody needs a digital portfolio. It is the easiest way for employers to find you, especially when you're first starting out, because nobody is looking for, you know, first year student Michelle who has a blog. No one's looking for me. So if you want to have employment, if you want to have a certain job, if you have really specific goals, or even if you're just trying to get out there in general, you have to make it easy to be found. So if you feel like you have knowledge gaps in like blog writing or visual photography that you didn't get a chance to make for a school grade, that shouldn't stop you from making a portfolio and thinking, you know, I have nothing to share. All of the stuff that I do is just schoolwork. I don't really have anything to put in my portfolio, which isn't true at all. There's this argument that schoolwork shouldn't belong as experience in a portfolio, which I believe is definitely not true. If you're making schoolwork, if you're doing these projects and these comp plans and whatever it is, but you don't feel like they are worthy of being portfolio pieces, you either are not going into school in the right way, you're just going in to get a decent grade, passing and getting a degree, or you could take that chance and just take it and then figure out ways that you want to make it better and then add it to your portfolio. There's a lot of things that you can add to it. And then if you find that you have knowledge gaps and things, just make them. I think that that's a level of initiative that people need to start bringing to digital portfolios, instead of thinking, you know, I have nothing to share, I have nothing to say, all these things that I have are pretty mediocre, then make them better. You know, it's better to have anything in your portfolio as opposed to nothing, because then you can't be found, nobody knows who you are, nobody knows what you're about. At the very least, if you put the things that you are pretty proud of that you've done in school, and then on top of that, if you can build and create new things that you are genuinely proud of that are outside of school, it can really show you not only as a potential employee to this person, but also just you as a human being, which really sets you apart from others. So in the tactical side of things, when you're making a digital portfolio, you can start with things like Wix or WordPress, which are free. So those ones, you have a very basic sort of blog aesthetic that you can kind of fit into whatever it is that you need. So you can link out and show them into PDFs. You could link out to like social media accounts, which if you are following before, if you made a fake social media account, you can use that here as a case study in your portfolio. So if you use it with Wix or with WordPress, those are free. Or if you wanted to do something that is a little bit more sleek, you could go into Squarespace and have your own domain name. You can have more creative power about the types of things that you post, how they show up, the types of fonts that you use and everything like that. But if you're just starting out, Wix and WordPress are the cheapest and the easiest to work with, even if you're not exactly the most techie person out there.
That's great advice. Thank you for sharing that. I like that point about be easy to find. You know, that makes sense. And I guess including your social media platforms on your resume is a way to be more findable to your employers. The other thing, you know, you talked about schoolwork. every piece of schoolwork you do is vetted by your professor and comments are made. A rubric is attached. And, you know, to your point, if you don't like the grade, or let's say you did like the grade and you only have to tweak a few things, why not use that piece? Like, maybe it's not perfect after you get it back from the professor, but with a little bit of extra effort and taking some of the advice, you know, you can improve it into a portfolio piece, which is an excellent point.
So just to build onto that, I think that it's important to see them as not, you know, be all end all pieces. If you are somebody who very specifically enjoys, you know, fashion and makeup, but the school projects that you do never choose it as like the comm plan example that you have to build it around, or you never really find a chance in order to share your thoughts on like how a certain industry works, if you like fashion, if you like makeup, whatever it is, if you never get the opportunity to make it, then it just stands to reason that you should just make the time and make it yourself. If you think that you genuinely have a really good idea for Aritzia, it says a lot more about you if you can just build it. If you just build it, prove it, you know, here's what I think it would do. I'm not doing this for a grade. I'm not doing this to get a job at Aritzia, but I am doing it to not only show myself that I know what I'm talking about, but also to show it to others that like, look, I'm really passionate about this thing. And here's why, here is it in its full form, and do what you will with that. But it gives you these different like facets of who you are as a person in order to share sort of the best parts of yourself and be easier to find. People can really pin you down as somebody who is interested, who has initiative and all of these things. So I think that if you don't have the experience that you're looking for and people aren't giving you the experience, you really just have to make it.
Great point. You have to find this real world experience. It doesn't all have to be paid positions. And we've talked about that in other episodes where, as you said, make it yourself, make the opportunity yourself. How did you get started on your own online presence? Like, what was your sort of motivation, or what was like your first step? What was your process?
I think it was in my first writing lab where I had been writing, you know, press releases and writing these like media announcements and all of these kinds of things. But then I wasn't really feeling like it was really for me. And even to this day, as I've started to get into the industry, I'm realizing that that's not my thing. That's not the kind of writing that I want to get into. So, you know, I don't choose those types of projects. So I just don't do them. But when I was first starting out, I figured, you know, since I'm not really interested in sort of the very formal types of ways that communications can be used and the different writing that you can use, I decided to open up my own poetry blog. So I used WordPress. I used a totally free site. I just threw a poem or a story or whatever it was that I had. I would put it up every Sunday, and I've been doing it ever since first year. And then I researched everything about it. So I wanted it to be better because I really truthfully didn't have anything else to do. I was a first year. I didn't really have a job, so I was just trying to find ways to make this thing, like my passion project, into the greatest thing it could possibly be without putting money into it. So I was researching things like how to get more views, how do I get more engagement, what are the best ways to write blogs, how do I get more people to come to the site, that kind of thing. So I would post it on WordPress. So I'd post the full poem or whatever it was on WordPress, and then I also would share sort of a snippet, like a sneak peek kind of, on Instagram to showcase it visually and to share it with my audience of people who actually knew me, as opposed to just the WordPress community, which I was building, but it's basically strangers that you like communicate with. So I was trying to deal with both audiences. And then from that, I used my blog as work experience on my resume when I applied for internships in my first year summer. So in order to do that, I think I wrote it as like founder of this blog, I write this and this, and here's how it goes, and this is how well it's doing, and all these kinds of things. I made it really quantifiable in order to really showcase what it is that I had been doing and why it was important. So I would say things like, how many views did I get in my first 6 months? The average engagement rate of each post, how often I post, the consistency and the timing of each post. And I definitely wouldn't have gotten my first internship if I didn't include the blog. And I say that and I really mean it. I, as a first year student who didn't really have much to prove, you know, you don't have to do your internship until third year, but I was just really excited. I really wanted to get into it. So I had this blog, I had like miscellaneous volunteer work here and there that I could frame in a way that would make it seem like I had a lot of, like, not a lot, but PR experience just in general. So it was certainly the one defining thing I had that proved I knew how to manage a project. I had the initiative to care enough to do it for no one's sake but myself. And I also understood what metrics were important to showcase. And I think you can do this with your own personal social too. For example, if you earned 20% engagement rate on your Christmas post, or you deliver 8% follower growth rate every month, hashtag strategy brings in X amount of new followers to your feed, et cetera. It's not so much about what specifically the social is about. And all of those numbers are, you know, they're made up. But at the same time, it's about whether or not you know what numbers are important to show off and to show how well you're doing. Because people want numbers and quantifiable proof that you know what you're doing. So as opposed to saying, you know, I founded this blog, it's really fun. Here's all these things I talk about. I love to write every week, you know, very sort of top level information about what the blog is, as opposed to what I actually did, which I made it quantifiable. So I talked about my views, my engagement, all of these solid numbers that I'm like gaining growth. I'm earning a lot of new eyeballs to the site and all of these things to prove that it's not about my blog. It's not about whether or not my blog is going to make me a book one day. It's about, I know what makes my blog good and I know how to get more people to it. So you have to find ways to make quantifiable growth really important on a resume and on a portfolio in order to prove, especially at first, that you know what you're talking about, because you know, but you have to prove it to other people.
That's true of your resume outside of social media as well, right? To show quantifiable results no matter what. But those are excellent tips to really take the attention away from the content itself. Let's take the pressure off how good the content is and focus on what you're really learning in that process, which are the analytics, which is super valued in industry. So based on everything we've heard so far, we know you're doing a good job. So can you tell us a little bit about where are you right now, you know, in terms of your academic path and your professional path?
Yeah, so I interned at an agency for a couple years, and then I went to in-house at TIFF, the Toronto National Film Festival, for their festival in 2019 and then also in 2020. And then since then I've been freelance after that. So in terms of, I know I speak to a lot of students who wonder, you know, do I want to go corporate? Do I want to go nonprofit, agency, freelance, all that kind of thing. I personally have discovered that I enjoy freelance more. I prefer to have more control with the projects that I take on, obviously how much I'm worth and things that I'm willing to do, and the projects that I decide to take on, the clients and everything like that. So I really enjoy having all of that power and the control to pick and choose the things that I genuinely care about and to, you know, charge more on things that I maybe I'm not as interested in. So today I specialize in social media strategy and copywriting as a co-founder of Super Duper Studios. I partnered up with these two collaborators that I love to work with, and we function sort of as a full external creative department as support for agencies who need the help, but they don't have full-time in-house team 24/7. And besides that, I'm also graduating in April. So a lot of things have happened in my 4 years at Humber. Very, very busy. And sometimes it just feels like I'm just along for the ride, but I'm very grateful for that. I've been busy the whole time. Very thankful for all the things I've learned, especially from you too. You were one of the reasons why I started my blog at the start. So it's been really fun. Yeah, absolutely. It's been fun to reflect on it and see how far things have changed in the last 4 years, and to still think of myself as, you know, like I basically still think of myself as the 21-year-old who came into school in 2017. So it's been really interesting to see my own growth and realize that I'm not looking at somebody else, I'm looking at me, which is really fun and also super terrifying.
And you should be very proud. Okay, one question before I ask your final thoughts. How'd you come up with Super Duper? I like to hear the story.
Well, the the whole story in general with Super Duper is that I've worked in agencies where like a mid-sized campaign where you don't really know where to put all of the time and the effort. So like it takes a long time for an account person to find the copywriter and the social strategist and the videographer and the graphic designer. And it takes ages to find all these people, and then you find them, and then you have to just like pray that they all work well together. So it's this, and like that hasn't even started the project yet. So it's something that I've experienced as a freelancer where I don't really enjoy having this like mishmash of people I've never worked with. You don't know for sure if like you're gonna clash or anything like that. So having us three put together, a videographer, a social media person, and also a art director. So all three of us together are kind of a package deal, and we help support agencies who maybe don't have the time to hire X amount of people in X amount of time. They don't want somebody in 24/7, but their client is asking for some project very quickly. And it's the easier way of just having one person to call, and then you call all of us basically. So we are the ultimate package deal. And then in terms of Super Duper, the name, it actually took us a long time to get there in terms of naming, because we had worried that it would be a little bit too kiddy. Before we had done any of the logos and the design and the aesthetic and everything, we were thinking like, is anyone going to take this seriously if we call ourselves Super Duper? But I think you have to kind of lean into that too. With social media, sometimes it can be just so serious, you know, like influencers who are posting this and that, and, you know, social media has to be perfect all the time. The aesthetic has to be right. Everything has to be black and white, or everything has to have like a pink tinge to it. So I think that having this sort of aloofness to the name was really exciting for us to do. And people have been really receptive to it. And if it has only given us a foot in the door because our name is great, then that's a win for us too.
That's Super Duper. That's the way you want it to be. That's great.
You won't believe how many emails I get that are like that.
I can't imagine. Okay, Michelle, I've taken up a lot of your time. What are your final thoughts? Anything else you'd like to say to our listeners about social media presence or anything else?
So I would say my one thing, if this is the only part of the podcast you listen to, I think it's don't wait for somebody else to give you a chance. You have to give that faith to yourself. You have to be willing to maybe fail some of the time. Because if you don't, then you aren't open to being good at anything. If you aren't giving yourself that faith in order to try something new, maybe not be good at it at first, or just in general, you know, believing that you have this time, you have the initiative, you just have to do it. Social media is a blank canvas that you can build into whatever you need it to be whenever. So create things that you enjoy, showcase things that you love, be open to being bad at stuff for the first little bit, and then just do it for you. If it's not fun, then you're doing it wrong. I think that you really need to enjoy the things that you do. And if it's social media, if it's not social media, no matter what it is, you just have to give yourself the chance, and you have to put in the effort for you. You got to show up, you have to do the work. And then if people see you, great. And if they don't, they will.
Those are wise words. And, you know, just to summarize what you've been talking about, I guess, you know, while developing a social media presence early on in your career is no guarantee, you know, that our listeners are going to have the same success as you, Michelle, it may not even be the right path for them. So, you know, that's okay. But if you are interested in a career as a communicator, it's obvious that having an online presence early on will certainly give you an advantage. So thank you again to Michelle Nguyen for joining us today to share her thoughts on building a social media presence.
Thank you so much for having me. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you, Michelle. You've been listening to PR Delivered, available where you listen to podcasts. I'd love your feedback, so feel free to reach me, Andrea Tabchar, on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thank you to Ryan Garbett for music and production.